Hello everyone, welcome back to the Pearpod. Thank you all for listening, thank you for supporting the last episode. Flying through season 5 here, folks. Delighted today to welcome pro heavyweight boxer, 8-0 boxer, Thomas Cardy. Thomas, thank you so much for coming on, bro. Appreciate it. We met on the TRE show, that was the first thing we met. And I remember even watching that, like, you were incredibly self-aware about your own experiences. You didn't try and oversell yourself, always very humble. Did you kind of, when you were first getting into boxing, did you, like, you can see guys who get very full of themselves early on in their career, you always seem to come across very humble. Like, where did that come from?
It's a weird one. I think, you know, I don't personally know anybody who's lost a run of themselves. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a very humbling sport, and it's one of those kind of things that if you, you know, you do it for long enough and you get to a certain level, you realize, you know, we're all in the same boat. You know what I mean? So personally, I don't know too many people that lose that, but I know what you're saying. I know the stereotype, but myself, it's a very humbling sport, and it's very hard to be big-headed because there's always someone bigger and better, you know what I mean?
Except in you for heavyweight boxing, like, there isn't. You even have more of an opportunity to be very boastful because you're the biggest guy usually in the gym.
Yeah.
So when it's particularly with heavyweight boxing, I hear a lot of people talk that heavyweight boxing is almost like a sport in its own versus the rest of boxing. When you were growing up and first getting into it, were you always bigger when you were younger, like a bigger kid?
Tall and skinny. So, like, sorry, tall and skinny. So from about 16, I was like, you know, I was this height straight away. As long as I can remember, I was tall, but I was really skinny. So I wouldn't have been a heavyweight at the time, but I always knew I was going to get to that because you grow up and then you grow out, you know what I mean? But I was playing Gaelic football, and I was tall, always the tallest, but certainly not the strongest or anything like that on the pitch, which is why I started boxing.
What kind of lads are usually the heavyweights at, like, the younger age? Are they usually just lads who are, like, fatter and heavier usually?
The overfed lads, yeah.
It's like the particularly when you're first starting, when you get in there at amateur boxing versus pro, the actual way you fight and the way things are scored and things like that, there's no KOs or anything like that in amateur boxing, is there?
You would try your very best, yeah, but there's not that many, no.
Because they talk about like people adjusting their styles when they go to pro, like it's much more about scoring points and not getting hit in the amateurs, and then you obviously progress into pro boxing. How was that transition for you when you were going from amateur to pro?
Me personally, I haven't changed anything majorly, to be completely honest. My biggest asset and attribute would always be like footwork and movement, and then being quite technical. So I haven't changed anything crazy. But like, I think in the amateurs, the gloves are slightly different. They're slightly more padded at the front. You know, it is harder to knock people out. Now, stoppages do happen. I have plenty myself in the amateurs, but it's not as common as boxing. And I think they glorify knocking people out in professional boxing. That's what people want to see. So that's what the emphasis is on. So usually you take a lot more to try and land a knockout punch in the pros in comparison to the amateurs. Like you said, you know, people try to score points in that.
Did you have, particularly when you were first growing up in the sport, when you first go in there, I'm guessing it's an incredibly intimidating experience first going into a boxing gym and things like that. Did it kind of come to you like very quickly in terms of your love of the sport, or when you were transitioning from Gaelic football, were you like, fuck, this isn't quite the same thing. I love the team aspect of Gaelic football versus now a solo, you're reliant on yourself, you know?
I never liked the team aspect of any sport. Yeah. So that was it. I'm extremely competitive. So I think had I never played Gaelic football or boxing, I would be doing something else competitively. I think that's just me. My personality, and that's how I was brought up. And, you know, my brother's competitive. We'd all be competitive in my house. You know, even my mom is competitive, you know what I mean? So, I think regardless, I would always be competitive. But what appealed to me about the boxing was the, you know, the single sport aspect. Although you have a coach and you do have a team, and now as a pro, they're more important than they ever were. But at the time, I was coming from having only ever played in team sports. And then all of a sudden, I tried like a single sport. It was, you know, fully reliant on myself. And I loved the contrast where, you know, I would have taken boxing when I started really serious, and I was taking Gaelic football very serious, but the other 14 maybe weren't taking it as serious, you know, so that's what really drew me to boxing.
Did you notice a different type of person in the gym versus in Gaelic football? Like, did you notice the guys in there, particularly like a harder kind of guy, or like different, like even personalities and things like that? Did that stand out at all?
I don't think it stood out, to be completely honest, but it, in a way it did. What you're saying is very interesting, the way it did, because I came from playing Gaelic football in Clontarf to then boxing in Bella Place in town. So like the people who were in the two clubs were very different, but nothing really stood out, you know what I mean? I never felt out of place, you know what I mean? I never felt out of place playing Gaelic football, very receptive. And the same with boxing, you know, everybody's level and everybody's on you know, coming from the same place, no matter what area you're coming from, we're all level in the boxing gym, you know, which is what I really liked as well.
Was there boxing in your household? Did you watch boxing when you were younger? Do you remember your first memory of boxing?
Not really. There wasn't really. My dad plays football. They're both support football. My dad did play football. My brother Liam played football. Everybody really likes football in my house, apart from me. I don't actually watch too much sports.
I remember you saying you didn't fucking hate football.
I actually don't watch too much sports on TV, to be honest with you. Wasn't crazy into football growing up. I did play now. I played for Bowes, Crumlin. Who else did I play for? Leeward, Celtic, Crumlin and Bowes. I played quite competitively. Clubs, like, younger. Yeah, of course, when I was younger. But I never really liked it. It was more of a case of my mom and dad probably didn't want me in the house any longer. Put me into everything, you know what I mean? But yeah, wasn't really into football. There was no boxing in the family. I found out eventually there was. One of my granddads actually boxed from over this way. He's from James Street, Flatstead. He actually boxed, but I didn't know that at the time. And he actually died before I started boxing, which is crazy. So there was no boxing in the household, really. I fell into it, really.
Why? How did you fall into it?
So I was always really tall and growing up tall and, you know, quite competitive. And being from town, you always end up in trouble. Scraps here, there and everywhere. Nothing too crazy. Like, it wasn't the Bronx, but it wouldn't be far off. And you would need to learn how to fight. Otherwise, you get taken, you know, advantage of or whatever. And I have a family friend, Git Conway, Christopher Conway, a really good family friend. He's just like family, actually, to be honest. And he was coaching in the club at the time. And he coerced me into going somehow. And it was something that I've never even considered before. You know what I mean? So he coerced me into going. And within 6 months of him bringing me to the boxing club, I won my first All-Ireland title, which is a good achievement in itself, you know?
What are people saying to you when they first see you box? Did they notice immediately that, like, yeah, this guy, if he puts time into it, there's something here with this guy?
Yeah, I remember through the years, like, all the best coaches, you know, best amateur team coaches in the world, all these really, you know, experienced coaches always commenting on how much potential I have, you know what I mean? And, like, if one or two people say it, say, oh, fair enough, but everybody has always been in agreement that I've loads of potential. Even still, at 28 years of age, as a pro, like, everybody comes on how much potential I have and how good I could be, do you know what I mean? So there's a lot of pressure, but pressure is a privilege. So, yeah, absolutely, pressure is a privilege. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how much I can push the boat out. But they've always said, you know, that's been the common denominator, is that I've loads of potential. That's a word I've heard a lot.
It's crazy to go from new to boxing into the amateur game, and now suddenly, like, that transition from, like, this is going to be my career, I'm going to go pro. Do you remember that time and being like, this is what I love? I know we've talked actually on TRE about you've never really had another job. Like, your focus has been boxing now pretty much since you started it.
Yeah.
Number one, what was the motivation to be like, yeah, this is going to be what I'm going to do? And number two, how difficult is it financially in those early years to try and, you know, be able to train all the time, but also be able to sustain yourself? You know, that period kind of gets overlooked a lot. We were just talking about it with pro athletes and combat sports in general.
Anything I've ever done since starting boxing, anything I've ever done, like, financially, in terms of, like, jobs or making money, was always just the fun being able to train, because it's what I really enjoy. You know what I mean? In the beginning, I still do, but in the beginning, I have a really good support system. My dad was always really good to me. Aunties, uncles, granddads, everybody really looked after me through the years, and which allowed me to focus on boxing. I never really had to stray too much. Any jobs I've ever had, I ran a small boxing gym in Castleknock, and that in itself was literally just the fun training. You know what I mean? Looking back, it's actually it's pretty cool, because I built this small gym, and it grew quite big, to be completely honest. And it was always with the intention of just funding my training, you know? Really difficult in the beginning, because, you know, you're growing up, there's so many things you have to keep up with your friends, and
you miss out on a lot
of
stuff.
These clothes, this car, you know what I mean? You want to try and be involved, but then you're also trying to pursue something that's quite different to the lads who might just have jobs and, you know what I mean, do nothing really else outside of that, you know? So it has been really difficult, but I really just made it work, to be honest.
I know you said we talked a lot in that period on TRE about that period, you know, late teens into early 20s, where people have to start making that decision. Am I going to go out socializing all the time? Am I going to put all my focus into this? And you even mentioned that, like, you got much closer with your brother in the later few years, because you were both motivated by the same stuff. You kind of kept each other accountable. What kind of things did you notice at that age? Did you notice, like, some lads going down other directions, the job, just partying every time they're not working, and you had to kind of make that decision at that time?
Yeah, I think my big thing growing up was like any of the lads who picked up bad habits, it easily happens, and it happens everywhere. Any of the lads who picked up bad habits is from having too much idle time. I never had enough idle time hanging out. Like, we used to hang around the canals growing up, or that's where everybody was. I was never there because I always had something that evening or the next morning. You know what I mean? So, to be honest, it wasn't a conscious decision I made not to pick up these bad habits or not to, you know, get involved, go down the wrong road. It was just that I didn't have the time. That's what I would put it down to, you know what I mean? Now, obviously, great discipline comes with the sport and, you know, it's surrounded by really positive people and great role models, which is a huge part as well. But I think personally, when I think back, I never had the time to stray off course. You know, I really, really enjoyed what I was doing. So I just continued doing what I was doing and by chance missed out on everything else that could have happened.
Did you ever feel like I'm missing out on too much stuff here? These are the golden years of my childhood. Did you ever have that? Were you always like, I have faith that what the time I put in here is going to reap the rewards?
No. So the latter of what you said there, never. So I had fit. No, that wasn't even a thing. I just really enjoyed what I was doing and I would weigh up the two. Do I hang around with the lads tonight or do I go training? It was always, there was never even a question. It was always training. But it was never some, you know what I mean, some sixth sense where like, oh, I'm going to, you know, make a career out of this. It just happened, to be completely honest. I have no really crazy motivational story in the sense that I always knew I was going to, you know, make it into a career. I just really, really enjoyed what I was doing. And, you know, when you weigh up the two options, as I said, do you go out with the lads? Do you go here, there, everywhere, drinking with the lads? Or do I, you know, go training tonight and training tomorrow because of a fight coming up soon? It was always the fight coming up soon, you know?
How there's an element of your early career, and even when I was going back through it now, which is just insane, that like when you were a 1-0 pro, you got approached by, was it 1-0 when Dillian White and Anthony Joshua wanted you to start sparring with them just to give them some looks for like Usyk and stuff like
that?
It
was Anthony Joshua first, yeah. So I made my debut during lockdown. I made my debut in Brussels, which was a bit mad. Not the dream start to your career, but it was a really good show. Got the opportunity. I said, yeah, let's go now. Like, and I'd been training for a long time. So I got approached before the fight, actually. And, you know, because I had been in a couple of the sparring camps. I had been in sparring with Derek Chisora for the Usyk fight before even turning pro, you know, because I was training really hard during lockdown. That's when things started to ramp up.
What did they see in you? Like, is it your movement? And like, for a heavyweight particularly, your footwork, your movement? Because to imitate someone like Usyk, who is like technically one of the best boxers to watch, like fundamentally is beautiful.
Yeah.
And for you to be told as a 1-0 pro, I'd love you to emulate that. You have some of the elements to emulate that. That's a huge compliment as a 1-0 pro, you know, or I've not even fought yet as a pro.
Yeah, of course. I think I always had good fundamentals myself. I was taught by a really good boxing coach in the beginning, Jimmy Halpin. He instilled some really good qualities in me and I was quite athletic even though I was big. So those would be huge attributes that would, you know, that you'd bring in to try and emulate Usyk, and the fact that I'm left-handed, you know, and I have like the stereotypical left-handed punches, left-handed combinations. So that would be what draws them to approach you to bring you in, you know.
What were those early sparring sessions like in terms of nerves beforehand, anything like that? Or do you see it purely as this is just an opportunity for me to get better? But like, even as a human, there's got to be some nerves that going in and stepping in with like, these are the best in the game. It's the highest level you can go at the sport.
I remember being 1-0 and AJ was a 2-time world champion at the time currently. And I had just had my first fight, came back. Everybody was drinking on the street during lockdown at that time. And I went for a drink with the lads after my fight and was like, oh, I have... Yeah, it transpired that I had sparring the following week and I was like, mad, I'm going sparring AJ next week. And at the time, you know, it was huge. Like, it was the biggest thing that happened. It was all over the papers and stuff like that. But then, you know, it's happened so much in my career now. I've become quite desensitized to these massive celebrities and huge names in boxing, which is kind of cool, to be honest, because, you know, it validates me as a fighter, you know. But definitely there was nerves. There always is nerves, but in the beginning there was definitely nerves. But you try and just take it as another stepping stone, no pressure, even though there's a lot of pressure, you know what I mean?
What were some of the things that stood out to you when you went from your own training to training with AJ? Like even like the way they train, habits, the focus they have maybe on their nutrition, hydration before, like did some of those things stand out to you?
Biggest thing for me that I noticed differently between like, you know, the really competitive days as an amateur to, you know, the early days as a pro, it's seeing all these top guys training was the intensity in which they train at. So they're training to get paid. It's completely different to training for sport, completely different. The intensity that they do everything and, you know, the attention to detail in comparison to someone that's doing it for the crack, which I was always doing it for the crack, but quite serious, you know. The intensity is completely different.
Around that time, had you made the decision already, like, I'm going to give this my 100% go, like, as you turn pro? Or did getting in there validate you being like, this is right here for me if I put the work in?
Yeah, you know, I thought the gap was huge. Before turning pro, I thought the gap was huge. So I went sparred with Derek Chisora and I was like, this is crazy. Absolutely crazy. He was managed by David Hay at the time and met some great pros, did some great rounds. And I knew the gap. I thought that the gap was huge. But then after sparring Derek and seeing the quality of guys there, really, really good guys, I wasn't a million miles off the mark. You know, I wasn't out of my depth whatsoever. And, you know, I really felt as though it's something that I could pursue if I wanted to. And even when I sparred Derek Chisora in the beginning, and I'm so thankful for him because he gave me an opportunity as an amateur to come over, and I really put my name out there. You know, got to know who everybody was. Everybody got to know who I was. And, you know, it really snowballed from there, to be completely honest. And even still, I hadn't made the decision to turn pro, but had gotten a really good look into how a pro camp looks and how life is as a pro. And it just really snowballed from that moment. I think that was October 2020.
It's not a long time ago.
No, it's not.
It's crazy. Like, did you like, I'm guessing you first got in there and you were like, all these lads here, their one goal is to win heavyweight boxing fights. So being in that kind of environment, you're like, this is what I want to do. This is the fucking thing I want, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like, I got dropped in the deep end in Derek Chisora's camp. He's training to fight Usyk, and you know, you see the glamour, the cars, everybody's the watches and stuff. I had nothing, still had nothing. You know what I mean?
Casio on.
Yeah, literally. Over, yeah. And I had nothing at all. So it was mad to see how it is at the top end, and it's really appealing and it's really attractive. But then, you know, I didn't also know that the gap was huge to make it from where I was to there. You know what I mean? And I'm not even close to there right now. But I'm on my way, definitely. You know what I mean? But the gap is massive.
What kind of things would being a good sparring partner entail? Like, are there coaches coming to you and being like, we need you to be trying to keep the distance, we need you to try and emulate this kind of footwork? Like,
yeah.
Are you in conversation about that, or are you just going in and doing your thing?
That is a thing. Like, that is a thing for the likes of sparring partners and stuff. I've definitely heard of it happening before, but personally, from my experience in the last 4 years, I've never been asked to do anything in particular. I've always just been asked just to do what I do and give as good of rounds as I can get, which in itself is a bit of a compliment, because I wouldn't be doing too much off the mark or out of the ordinary, you know what I mean? That's what I do naturally is what they're looking for. So
so that's a huge, like, for an up-and-coming pro boxer, like, that obviously that's a revenue earner for you early on in your career, and then to get that kind of experience is kind of like invaluable. How big a moment, or like, how much did you take from that going into your pro career, like working with these guys? Because I'm sure so many guys would never get that opportunity, guys who don't fit into the mold they're trying to recreate, you know?
Yeah, it stands you massively, because you're getting experience with the top guys in the sport, absolute top guys in the sport. I could name, like, you know, out of the top 10, I've sparred definitely the majority of the top 10 at the moment, which is mad. But to know that you've sparred with these guys, then you're coming in fighting guys at your own level, psychologically for yourself, nothing on that guy. I'm not saying he should be scared because I sparred this guy, sparred that guy. It means nothing. But for myself, the, you know, the confidence I can take away is massive. You couldn't actually pay for it. I couldn't pay to spar Tyson Fury if I wanted to spar Tyson Fury tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? You can't. Money can't buy that.
They I'm sure anyone up and coming in the heavyweight division, they're super selective. They don't want to give looks to like all these up and coming guys. So it's for them, is what he's offering more valuable than me giving these looks? And obviously it was.
Yeah, 100%.
What was maybe, you mentioned when you went over to Portugal there for, was it Dillian White, or you've gone for a couple of times?
Yeah.
I remember you mentioned in TRE, you were like, at the start, you didn't really know how to like cook and nutrition and things like that. So
yeah.
did going over there and seeing like guys, I'm sure they had like chefs and like prepared meals and stuff, did that kind of show you, okay, this is another element I need to hone in on my nutrition to kind of go to this next level?
Yeah, camps can be quite different. You know, I remember being with AJ for the second Usyk fight. He had like some Formula One chef, which was just mental. You know, it was crazy. He cooks for Lewis Hamilton and stuff. And then when we were in Portugal with Dillian White that time, we all got our own kind of like own apartment. And I remember having the YouTube how to cook potatoes. I think I said that before.
You're having cereal.
At 26, but I've definitely learned a lot more since. But you know, that's something that I've definitely tried to hone in on, because it's all those 1% that add up as a pro. You know what I mean? We all do the training. But look, everybody should. We all do the training, match each other training wise. I think you can train smarter and harder. I get that. But eventually it levels out. It's all those 1% sports psychologists, nutrition, you know, hydration. It's the likes of that sets you apart then, you know. So it's definitely something that, since going to these professional camps and seeing how much they hone in on their nutrition and hone in even on recovery, you know what I mean? It's definitely something that I've had to learn and had to definitely hone in on myself in my own career.
When I was listening to the Talking Bollocks podcast, obviously a small kind of smaller podcast on the Irish side,
yeah.
But you talked about, and it kind of like stood out to me so much that you took a flight back from Portugal, and I remember you saying that like you'd had an issue with your kidneys from like body sparring and stuff,
yeah,
and you'd actually ended up like passing blood and things like that on the plane,
yeah.
And like for me, that stood out so much because especially at the start, people see you going over to train with AJ and they go, what a lucky...
It was AJ.
Was it?
Yeah.
They go like, what a lucky guy, living his dream, gets to go over and, you know, live the best life and beaches. They don't, like, I don't think people even comprehend. They're like, no, you're getting your head kicked in and your goal is to make them better.
Yes.
So those kind of moments, when you're having those moments on the plane and you go, man, I'm just broken to bits here.
Yeah.
Is there moments where you're like, I don't know, if, like, this is a crazy way to make a living, or is it like, no, this is just part of the game?
Yeah, it's always that kind of an argument I have in my head. I would consider myself, you know, clever enough. I always say this, clever enough. You know, I wouldn't be the most intelligent guy in the world because I wouldn't be boxing if I was. Yeah, so I consider myself intelligent enough. And call me quite naive, but I've never considered stopping because I know how close I am to being able to make, you know, life-changing money for myself. You know, otherwise, I would have no problem just saying, lads, that's it, I'm out. Like, I don't care.
You're a realist about it.
Genuinely, I am. I'm a realist about it. I would just be like, no, I'm going to get a job, you know, way too hard. And believe me, it's too hard. You know what I mean? It is really too hard. I've never considered stopping, you know, ever considered. Even like those moments I said to myself, oh, this is all part of the apprenticeship. Do you know what I mean? It is what it is. It would never deter me. It does make me more determined. You know what I mean? Because you're building up all these experiences and you say, I'm going to have to make this all worth it somehow. You know what I mean? Whether that is making them boxing or robbing a bank, I'm gonna have to do something. You know what I mean?
Did any conversations you had with AJ or obviously Dillian White's now your manager? Do you remember any conversations when you were early on in your career that gave you some, even if it was just him being like, "Fuck, you caught me there," like that was nice. Do you remember any of those? Like,
not really. You know, boxing's quite a proud sport. Generally, if someone catches someone, you wouldn't really acknowledge it afterwards. You know what I mean?
And just funny enough, yeah, that's 24 minutes. So we're nearly at the end of the first half, but I wanted to. I want to go through some of your fights with you. Obviously, we can't go through them all, but I want to go even far back. The Jay McFarlane fight. Do you remember that? Obviously, you do. Ginormous occasion. Like, huge occasion.
This time last year.
That's like, when you put it in perspective like that, even when I was putting down the dates, like, it's tiny amount of time to go from, like, starting your pro career and then you're fighting on the... Was that the Serrano-Taylor?
It was Cameron Taylor.
Cameron Taylor.
Yeah.
Even going into that fight, like was that the biggest occasion you were ever going to box on?
Yeah.
I remember you looked in incredible shape for that fight. I've seen you obviously in a number of your fights, but particularly in that one, obviously he was a bigger fella.
Yeah.
But you looked light on your feet, upper body was strong, but you also looked slim and ready.
Yeah.
Do you remember having a particularly good camp for that and feeling good coming out of it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was actually in that camp last year. So it would have been a year ago. In that camp last year, I injured my elbow. So I've had an ongoing, I've never had an injury in any sport in my life, but in that camp last year, I was having a really good camp coming into sparring. I was about 4 weeks out. And, you know, a lot of people hyperextend their arm this way.
I went the other way.
I just got punched here and I damaged the nerve in my arm. So it made sparring really difficult. But at the time, like, adrenaline was so high, this big massive card was coming up. I would have fought with one arm, genuinely. If I had that, I would have fought with one arm. But I had a really, really good camp. I was sparring a lot of really good guys. And it was only after that fight I realized, you know, set my elbow's foot, you know what I mean? But it got through the fight, thank God. Fight went really well, but I had a great camp for that fight.
How do you like your dressing room to be before a fight? Like, what kind of atmosphere do you like? Do you like it more Floyd with fucking, like, it's like a meet and greet when Floyd's doing it? Some people like dark room, as few people as possible. What kind of atmosphere do you like?
Good question, good question, because I've been in a couple, and I've obviously had eight myself now as a pro. And me, personally, I prefer it to be as normal as anything, as if there's not even a fight happening. Right up until 15 minutes beforehand, then it gets, you know, then it's real. But like, a lot of people burn this nervous energy for what reason, I don't know, you know what I mean? I'd like to keep it nice and calm. My coach is mad as well, Pascal is mad. So like, he talks to me the same before a fight as if it's a Monday, you know what I mean? Monday morning, having coffee somewhere, he's off the head, do you know what I mean? Which is great. I love Pascal for that because, you know, you have your game plan, you train for 12 weeks, yeah, or however long you're training for. You don't need to do anything, change anything, or say anything in the change room. I don't get it. I get some people like to be tense, and you know what I mean? I do really understand the contrast, but for me, as chill as possible, 15 minutes beforehand, switch on, go.
Could you hear the, like, obviously it was early in your career, but can you hear, like, even in the dressing room, like a bigger roar of a crowd? Like, can you hear the atmosphere out there a little more? Like, does that, is there nerves when you hear stuff like that and you know it's a huge occasion, or you're like, I can't fucking wait to go perform?
Me personally, yeah, I've always dreamt of being on those big cards. And I get there is a certain element of adjusting and stuff like that, but I love it, to be completely honest. I love the whole show. I love everything that comes with it. And I really enjoy it and I embrace it because, you know, I've had 8 fights, yeah. Like, I don't know what the average for a heavyweight is, but I'm probably 30, 40% through my career.
Yeah.
Genuinely. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just a rough estimate, 30, 40%. And I remember this Gary Cully's coach, Niall Barrett, said it to me before. And it really stuck with me. You know, certain things people say, he said, how many are you going to have in your career? You need to enjoy all of them. You know what I mean? So I really, really enjoyed them, especially the one in May. That was crazy. That was, you know, that was the biggest week of my life, and probably when I won that title, the best moment of my life so far.
Fuck.
Yeah, genuinely.
That's unreal, man.
That one still sticks out.
I watched that back yesterday, and like the even the walkouts and shit. Like, you've done the O2 twice now.
Yeah.
In Dublin. So like that, those are like homecoming fights, and you've had two so early in your career, like sold out crowds. Like, that's unbelievable. How big an effect does having the home crowd like bring into it? Is that all blocked out by the time you're at the ring?
For me, all that stuff is just external. It's blocked out. It's great and it's fantastic, but I don't think it makes a difference whether it was just me and Jay in the room that night, my reaction would have been the same, or whether all those thousands of people were there.
So interesting though.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people that like crumple in the occasion. Do you know what I mean?
I see, my thing is I'm super competitive, so I would have wanted to perform like that, fight like that.
Regardless,
whether it's on the street in Camden Street at 4 a.m, or you know, whether it's in the Tree Arena.
It's time.
Yeah.
Outside the Chipper. You mentioned there a little bit, he was having a little bit of a, like, talking when you were in the build-up. Obviously, that builds the fight, everything like that. Does that, does anything the opponent does bring you up or down in your build-up to the fight, or is it regardless of you, do you like him being like, sure, build a fight, make more people buy it, I'm coming in the same way no matter what?
I would have always said I don't care, and I would have always said, you know, all that stuff is irrelevant, it's only talk. But that was my first time experiencing it, and it does work, like, because I was trying not to watch interviews, then I was seeing like the clickbait headlines for the interviews, like, oh, I have to watch this, and then I was watching, I was like, where is he getting this from, you know? And then you're saying to yourself, maybe is he onto something? But like, definitely not. My mindset is bulletproof. But I can imagine if I didn't have such a good mindset and wasn't so confident and didn't have all the boxes ticked in training, that sort of stuff could definitely eat away.
It happens for a reason. Like, even like McGregor and Cerrone. You remember Cerrone was like going, he's like, I didn't even want to be there.
Yeah.
He's just like, the whole thing, the pressure, he said a lot of stuff. Like, it does work. That's why people choose to do it. What kind of, when you're fighting someone, obviously he's in a different physique to yours, let's say. Does that, in terms of intimidation, particularly at heavyweight boxing, anyone can knock you out with any shot. Everyone's got power. Does it matter to you when you see his physique versus yours going in? You're like, you haven't sacrifice things I've sacrificed.
No, nothing.
At all.
Very, 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 very controversial. You know, some people would say, you know, it doesn't belong in the ring. I've had fights with guys in the amateurs that looks like they've never fought a day in their life, and they're killers. So never ever judge a book by its cover, and that's so true in boxing.
Andy Ruiz, man.
This is it. That's so true. I fought a French guy, looked worse than Andy Ruiz, and was probably better than Andy Ruiz. Do you know what I mean? So. It looks to be deceiving. I never, ever underestimate anybody, because I always try to be my, you know, my thing is, as I said, with the walkouts and enjoying fight week, the same for fights. I try and try my best, because how many times are you going to get a chance to show people how good you are? You might as well put it in for every camp. Do you know what I mean? That's my thing on it.
Do you remember at the end of the fight, after you nearly jumped into the front row, you and Jay had a little chat there when you came down, just going back and forth a little bit. Do you remember what was said there?
I do, but I did remember, but I think I forget now. I think we basically just brushed off the whole
building the fight,
the whole shit talk all week. Basically, that's usually what it is. You know what I mean? we brushed it aside, and turns out he's a gent. I invited him to the after party, and he came. He came to Crystal. Yeah.
Oh fuck! Yeah, having the time of his life. Like,
yeah.
And then you go from that, and you go to the Dan Garber fight, which was on the, was that the Cameron Taylor undercard?
That was Cameron Taylor too.
Yeah. So that's like you go from occasion to occasion. You're probably getting used to these fucking huge cards.
Yeah.
And when you have a massive crowd like that, and like a pressure cooker, all those kind of things, how important is it for you to not try and force something and force the spectacular knockout and just get back to what you're supposed to focus on?
Yeah, of course. You know, from the first fight, a lot of people are singing my praises after the first fight because the knockout was spectacular. It was a great fight and the atmosphere was amazing, and I'd sold.
He came to fight as
well. Absolutely.
Which is important.
I sold thousands of tickets and we built it up really well, and it was really good. And then, you know, we were looking for an opponent. At that stage, I think I had 6 fights, 5 knockouts in a row. Left-handed, you know, obviously big puncher. It's hard to get an opponent, you know what I mean? So this guy, Dan Garber, came along and he talked a really good fight, looked in shape. All the videos that we watched beforehand, he was coming for throwing bombs. I think he had a couple of knockouts.
I watched those as well.
Yeah.
So different to how he came on the night.
And then talking, there was a lot of pressure for me to knock this guy out. And I'd never been more confident that I would knock somebody out. I was like, no chance. I said, you know, because like I said, I'm a realist and I know when I'm better than someone and I know when I'm not. You know, I know when it's suspected that I'm not. So I knew I was better, knew there was a knockout coming. But sometimes, you know, when it's cliche in boxing, and I've had it in the amateurs, when you try and force something, it doesn't come. And I was really expecting a firefight. Realistically, looking back, I probably should have just stood right in the center of the ring and just let him run all night. You know what I mean? The referee would have warned him. He would have had the fight and he would have got knocked out sooner.
Do you have do you get frustrated at things like that? Can you get frustrated like that when you're like, come on, let's have this. Look at the crowd we have here. Let's put on a show.
Yeah.
But like, that's boxing.
Yes and no,
day,
like,
you know?
Because, you know, it was a bit frustrating. It was my first time experiencing that. And then I spoke with my manager, Dillian, afterwards, and he gave me some really, really wise advice, and he was so right. He told me after the fight that nobody signs the fight and has to stand there to take punches from you. You know what I mean? It's a chess match, genuinely. And I would be very aware of that. And, you know, I do get it. But I just thought, considering the occasion, considering the talk, you know what I mean? He had said all these things in the build-up. I was like, okay, here's another good fight. And there was more pressure on me for the second one than the first one because people enjoyed the first one so much.
Yeah, you're coming off a huge performance. Yeah, everyone loved it.
You know what I mean?
And they go, I got to be there for this fight. This guy's a fucking animal.
Yeah. So listen, it wasn't true lack of trying from my end, but the guy
got there in the end.
Yeah, the guy ran all night. We got him in the end, thank God, yeah.
I don't know if it was the Jay fight or the Dan Garber fight where your coach in the corner, I think it was like after the second round, Paddy Collins was like his demeanor in the corner is so, as you said, like it's like you're in training. He goes, man, what are you doing? Take a little bit of pressure off. Straight shots.
Yeah.
Crazy. Next round, you land like a couple of the most vicious looking round twos or one twos. I think it was the Jay McFarlane fight.
Yeah.
In the corner, when your coach is talking to you, is there just so much of a relationship built up there that you can just trust everything he's saying to you and you just sit there? So you're a total piece, being like, Grant, he sees everything, this is what I need, and have total faith in that. You know,
me and Pascal, we have such a good relationship. I don't even think he even needs to speak, you know what I mean? You can tell by his demeanor, by how he walks over and how he's even giving you some water, you know what I mean? You can tell whether he's happy or whether he wants you to do something else. But we would have such a good game plan going into a fight that, as I said, change the room, nothing really needs to be said. Between the rounds, you know, if things are going well, nothing really needs to be said. Everything remains the same.
The work is done.
Yeah, you know, genuinely. I mean, the work is done. Game plan is the same. Game plan was working, you know what I mean? And
I remember when you dropped him, you went back to your corner, and just in like the corner, you can just see your coach be like,
yeah.
He's obviously just telling you, just calm down, it's coming again. And it's just great to see like the... Obviously, this is someone that like has seen you blossom into, like who you are, knows you so well. And he now... he's now seeing you like fulfill your dreams. Do you know what I mean? Like, go on, do your thing. And when you finally got to the end of that fight, and now I think your next fight was out in the West on Paddy's Day.
Yeah.
What is that that kind of transition like to go from two of the biggest events maybe you'll have in your career, like sold out, to go to like smaller local venue in Ireland and perform? Is there any difference in the way you feel going into those fights, or it's the exact same as you said?
It's the exact same for me. You know, even with that card, that was my my management team's first time promoting a card, which was really cool. And I fought, Dillian was main event. They did a really good show. But I think regardless whether I fight, if I was to fight, you know what I mean, anywhere in the world, I bring such a big crowd with me at the moment, I bring such a big crowd at 8-0 that it's irrelevant where I fight. The atmosphere was amazing. But I think I know what you're saying, you know, to go from being at the sold out Tree Arena twice to going to the, I think, TF Royal and Castle Bar. It doesn't matter for me. You know what I mean? I train to fight, and that's all I really do is just fight. That's all I do on my end. Everything else is external. Everything else is promotional. You know what I mean? It's do promoters, managers, this, that, and the other, to build the event. But the fight is the same.
So pressure, anything like that, feels the same. It's your record either way. This is going on my record, so it's
exactly
the same level.
It's just as important. And as I said with the Jay McFarlane fight, if we fought in a, you know, someone's sitting room with nobody watching, or if we fought in the Tree Arena, it would be the same. I would take it as serious. I would, you know, feel as passionate about it. I would, you know, enjoy it as much, you know.
Are these all habits that, like, your coach would have helped instill with you, but, or is this something you've just, it's just your, this is the way you've been?
What do you mean habits?
Like, in terms of mindset, in terms of being able to be like, look, I know we just were on the Cameron Taylor 2 undercard, huge event. We've got this event, and, like, no matter what, it's the same amount on your record. The win counts the same as any other one. It's just interesting. A lot of people naturally would build to these huge occasions, and then when they're like, now we're going fighting here, it would feel like I can take the pressure off a little bit. There's not that many people, but it's actually, it seems with you, it makes no difference.
No, it makes no difference, because I would always be my own biggest critic. I don't need anybody to tell me, especially sparring, for example. I don't need my coach to tell me whether he sparred good or bad. I know, leaving the gym. Do you know what I mean? If you spar bad, you know, even if he tells you you're brilliant, which is not something that you want anyways. And if you spar really good, even if he's given out and passed with going mad, you did this, you did that, you should have done this. You know when you spar really good walking out of the gym. So it's the same with fights. I know myself what's required, and I know myself where I need to get to achieve what I want in boxing. And no matter how big or small the card is, you know, you need to be your best performance. It needs to be the best version of you.
Yeah. You, in an interview a few months ago, I think it was 4 months ago, the interviewer talked to you about promoters, and you just mentioned there, like, you bring a huge crowd. You've shown that now in a number of different events that you can pull an audience. And the promoting world, for people that don't know a huge amount, like, promoting, when you look at Eddie Hearn, you look at, and like any of these huge promoters, they all are looking for people that are drawing an audience, people that are driving people to buy tickets. They're invested in them. And you're now in an interesting position where you have so much good advice from Dillian, who's gone through this whole thing, and you're in a position where you can kind of take your pick for what suits you. You obviously don't need to go into specifics, but is this period right now been kind of having conversations with different people, see what makes sense for you?
Yeah, having different conversations, definitely, but it wouldn't be me and myself, it'd be my management team. You know, they're basically talking to everybody, to be completely honest. And they do on a fight-by-fight basis. You know, boxing business is a lot deeper than it seems on the outside. It's a lot deeper, but my management team have shown they're really, really good at what they do. With not just me, but with the likes of Fabio Wardy, Alan Babich, with Dillian White, you know what I mean? They've done an amazing job. So, to be honest, anything I've ever went against my management team in my head, they proved me wrong.
Yeah.
So in future, I'm just going to say, lads, work away. Do you know what I mean? They have done an A1 job with me so far. And once or twice, they proved me completely wrong when I did for an opinion.
Yeah.
So at this stage, I'm completely hands off. Not that I ever had a say anyways. You know what I mean? I do what I'm told. But these guys, you know, they really have my best interest at heart. Magic, Michael Ofo is... You know, he would be my manager in particular, and he's done a great job, you know what I mean? And he would be quite hard on me, but I appreciate it because he wants to see me do well, and he wants to see me achieve my dreams
and
in boxing.
He's being real with you, do you know what I mean? And like,
this is it.
I think a lot in boxing, and particularly at the start, we've heard of people who have mismanaged people's careers. Eddie Hearn's been critiqued in the past for maybe pushing someone too fast. And so having someone like Dillian and these people who have experience, like, how valuable do you think that's been for you in being able to focus on your boxing and know that the right decisions are being made based on, like, past experiences?
You can't put a price on it, because I know right now, sitting here 8-0, you know, my management team could get me a massive fight next for massive money, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, the more money I make, the more money they make. So they could just say, right, you're fighting him. Do you know what I mean? But they want to see me fulfill my absolute potential in boxing. And that's a tricky road to navigate. You know, as you said, people can be pushed too fast, too slow, you know. So they're doing a really good job so far. Long may it last and long may it continue. And I think it will, you know what I mean? As I think Dillian said in an interview recently after my last fight, he said I could fight for a world title, you know what I mean? And that's a guy who's been there, done that. You know, for him to say something like that validates me as a fighter. So listen, power to it, and long may it continue, as I said.
He doesn't come across, Dillian, as someone who minces his words or would say something for effect.
Absolutely not.
Seems like the opposite.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Have you ever he's never said anything that he doesn't stand over. You know, he's an awful joker. Like, we're always messing. But when it comes to serious time, he doesn't blow smoke. He's not in the business of blowing smoke. He doesn't need to. He's fighting himself. Do you think he cares about anyone realistically? That's why it's Dillian White management team, but there is a massive team behind Dillian. You know, Dillian White is the
best. He has his own career.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he has his own career to care about, to look after. You know what I mean? So do you think he's in the business of saying things that he doesn't mean? Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's no advantage to him in blowing you up or pushing you into something. And even like, on the opposite sense, as a manager, he could push you into this big fight and tell you, oh, you're ready, you're going to kill him, and he's going to make a nice percentage off that. But he's like, no, it's a long load of time here. Let's do things the right way. And boxing's in kind of an amazing place right now, the last like, couple of years with like Saudi Arabia and all those things. We're seeing huge fights all the time. And there's one that people have been lining up. Obviously, Johnny Fisher is available, has talked a little bit about you. Has that fight either been spoken about or something that intrigues you?
Everyone talks about it. I would love to fight. Mm. But I'm also so tired of talking about it myself because there's been no advancements. I'm sure it's a fight that'll happen down the road. I would love it to happen tomorrow. But...
And what do you think his, obviously for him, it's two big names, it would be a big fight. But like for him, not the easiest fight for him to take. Not going to be someone's...
No, of course.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's not smart for him.
I get it. Do you know what? It is a really good fight. It's two up-and-coming white heavyweights, you know what I mean? Which is, you know, that in itself would sell the fight. Me being Irish, him being English, we both have massive followings. I would fight him anywhere, to be honest. But it's been talked about so much. It's been ignored. It falls on deaf ears. So, you know what I mean? It's not really something. I'm in the business of building my own career. It's not really something that I'd be chasing, you know what I mean? I'm sure it'll make sense down the line somewhere. As I said, I would love it tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Because it would be great for my career. You know, a lot of people talk about, I'd love that fight tomorrow. And anybody in boxing that knows, you know what I mean? But it is what it is.
Do you have, you mentioned earlier in the podcast about that you invest in a sports psychologist. And it kind of shows itself all the time, the way you talk about yourself, the way you talk about your preparation, all those things. How important has something like that been for you in a sport like boxing, where there's no other sport like it in terms of the potential damages, the potential risk? So having someone who's working on your mind seems like invaluable.
Yeah, I started working with Alan Harry from a recommendation from my coach Pascal. He had worked with his brother Steve Collins, you know, two-time world champion before. So I started working with Alan off Pascal's recommendation, and I knew it would be good at the time, but I wasn't completely sold on it. Sure. But as a pro, you invest in yourself. I said, listen, if it's 0.5%, you know what I mean, it'd be money well spent. So I went to the first session, and to be honest with you, if I never went to him again, what I learned in the first session would be worth it in itself. So he basically explained to me your body's reactions to these different feelings and why you would feel in such a way based on something that's happened, and just having the understanding to why you get anxious before a fight, or having the understanding to why you feel nervous, you know what I mean? That in itself to me was worth all the money in the world, because
he normalized it all for you.
Normalized that I understood why I felt like this. He gave me a couple of techniques to combat things if it didn't feel okay. But just understanding that gave me such an edge, I think personally. You know what I mean?
And do you continue to work with him now, or is it just something? It's just someone.
Absolutely, we have a great routine. So we would have worked a lot together for the May fight, for the Jay McFarland fight. We would have worked a lot once a week or something. And he was like, you know, Thomas, you could probably, you know, take next week off, come to a gap. I was like, no, I'm going to come. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm a man of routine. I really liked what I was doing. I was getting a lot out of the sessions and was really enjoying them. So we don't work together as much, but we were always in touch. We do a couple of sessions here and there. And when I get a fight confirmed, then I'll go back into, you know, more regular.
What is the, I'm actually just generally interested, what is the format of one of those like? Is it more, does he feed you questions? Does he ask you what you're thinking about? Or like, how does he, I'm just interested in how he runs a session like that, you know, or is it different every time?
Thinking back now, like in the beginning, he would ask, you know, you come in, how you feel, like your general, how's things, how's training going? He would assess everything from his end, and it's basically just a conversation back and forth for about 40 minutes, how things are going, how things are feeling, could you be doing anything better? And then the last part of the session would be a visualization. So basically, what we were doing in May for the Jay McFarland fight is we were talking through fight day routine, you know what I mean? And what would happen is you would basically, usually lie back, close your eyes, and Alan would talk me through the whole day.
You live the day out.
Yeah, literally live the day. Yeah. So I, you know, I had felt like I'd been to the Three Arena 50 times before I actually got there. And, you know, as you've probably seen on this podcast, like already, I would be a realist. I'm not into airy fairy shit. Like, that's not my thing, you know what I mean? But it works. It definitely, it really, really works, you know what I mean? And I was very familiar with my fight day routine there or thereabouts when it eventually came around, you know what I mean? It felt like second nature. There was nothing out of the ordinary. I knew, you know what I mean? Get up, pack the bag, breakfast, you know what I mean? Come back, chill out, lunch, go to the venue, warm up, pan wraps on, and then talk literally to the whole walkout, you know, 50 times. I have them on my phone. I can play them. Do you know what I mean?
So you're walking in there. You're like, this is exactly how I remember it. This is
And it really, really works because, you know, people get nervous when they do something for the first time. Do you know what I mean? And then it becomes easier. Then it becomes, you know, it's just like anything. You know what I mean? It becomes a lot more regular and you don't feel out of place. And that's basically what you're trying to do is familiarize yourself with the occasion that's coming up. And there's a lot more you can do with visualization, by the way, but that's what our goal was for May. We've done a lot since then. We've honed in on, you know, making use of certain skills and sparring even, you know what I mean? It's very, very intricate.
He was obviously conscious of, like, you're going to go into an event in a venue that most people might not experience till they're 15, 20 fights into their career. You're experiencing that so early on. So he wanted to make sure, look, when you get there, this is what you're going to experience. And then it just made you be more at ease when you're in the ring. So is that something that a lot of boxers you've spoken to, like Dillian, those kind of guys, they all work with sports psychologists in some aspect? Dillian might be the only one that I've, like, he doesn't even need one.
He's his own sports psychologist. But yeah. I'm not 100% because, you know, I've actually recommended Alan to a lot of people that weren't using one. You know what I mean? So hopefully my next few sessions are free because he's gotten about 10 people out of me.
AJ just rang me like...
Yeah. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not one that would promote something that doesn't work. If something works, yeah, whether I'm getting paid or whether I'm paying for... Like, I will tell everybody it's great because it works for me. It doesn't mean it's going to work for you, but Alan is brilliant. You know what I mean? Not all fighters use a sports psychologist until it's too late. They say, oh, okay... took a loss or this happened
I'm on a skid let me do that.
Whereas I'm actively seeking, you know what I mean, the extra 1% here, there and everywhere. So you know, from experience, not every fighter does. I know that for a fact, but I think every fighter should try it. Might not be for you, might not need it, you know what I mean, but what harm is it? It's an hour conversation, or even you know, walk in 10 minutes, say, do you know what, Alan, you're no good, walk out. That's your own opinion. You know what I mean?
Even just to have someone, an impartial, someone to bounce your thoughts off. Just like, hey, this has been going through my mind. And just understanding why, like, one, it's natural, everyone thinks those things, but also why am I feeling those things?
As I said, the first session, like the actual explanation as to why your body works in certain ways, that in itself was worth all the money in the world. Yeah. You know, but for me anyways, I took so much away from the first because it's like, oh, okay, this is why I feel like that. You know what I mean? And this is how you combat that.
It's like nerves. A lot of people used to say, like, nerves are, it's your body preparing to perform.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So when you start to feel those nerves and butterflies, it's your body recognizing we're about to go and either compete or perform. And when you think about it that way versus it's not you being scared, it's you being aware of how, like, important this is to you on the big occasion.
Absolutely.
What are your goals for 2024? Or, like, your biggest goal for 2024?
My biggest goal for 2024, I'd love to win the Irish title this year. Yeah. So I'd love to add another title to the collection. There's a couple of lads I see maybe coming back active, which is fantastic. You know, I've been, you know, the lone wolf in the heavyweight division for a while in Ireland. And there is a couple of guys around. So hopefully we can get the Irish title fight on this year at some stage. Build my profile, you know, keep going the trajectory that I'm going in because it's only getting bigger and better all the time. And 2025, I want to roll the dice and I really want to buy a house in Dublin. So give me the Saudi fights.
The biggest dice roll. Like, yeah, exactly. We'll get out to Saudi.
Give me whatever fight. 2025, 29 years of age, I'll be, you know, I'm ready for anyone. And if I'm not ready at that stage, it'd be back to booking for my dad or something.
The way the world is now, like, you've even the Matchroom Queensbury, like 5-on-5 or whatever they're doing now, like all these things, there's so much opportunity for heavyweight boxing. Like, you actually, if you go through the events coming up, all the biggest names in the sport are fighting, even in this year. And whereas 5 years ago, you could be waiting a year to see your favorite fighter fight. So you seem to be going into a position now where there's going to be tons of opportunity and you have the right people around you to be like, I think this is our best option. So Yeah, man, I'm fucking buzzing to see what happens in the future. Yeah. Could I, can I ask you a few thoughts on some of the upcoming fights with other people in your
yeah,
weight class?
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, obviously you trained with Joshua. What did you make of the Joshua Ngannou fight? And did you expect that to happen?
Yep.
Did you?
I did, yeah, yeah. I sparred Joshua the week before he went to Saudi.
Yeah.
I'd just come back from sparring Tyson Fury. After that fight fell through because of the cut. I was home for a week and then they're like, oh, can you come spar AJ for a week? Ngannou turns southpaw sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I've sparred him before.
Yeah.
And AJ is on fire at the moment. I'm not going to lie. He really is on fire. He'll be world champion again, I think. But it was crazy watching the fight. Ngannou turned southpaw. First knockdown happened. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I want a bonus for that.
It's crazy that it's because after the Fury fight, everyone was like, this guy's going to be the next big thing in heavyweight boxing. And then it's almost like Joshua just brought everyone back down to a level and be like, no, you were correct at the start. You need to put time into this sport in order to succeed at it.
Absolutely. And my take on, you know, Fury's performance versus AJ's performance, people have different styles. Styles make fights. Doesn't mean that AJ is better than Fury based off how they beat Ngannou. Yeah, and as well, my big thing, this is probably more for the boxing fans and people that watch boxing, but to beat somebody that's unknown and, you know, that hasn't had any losses on their record is a lot harder to beat someone when they have one on their record.
You've nothing to go off.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, I always say that.
Have you noticed when you sparred Joshua there, and you've obviously sparred Joshua a lot of your career, it seems like he's made that transition back towards like the end of Klitschko fight, that more brutal,
yeah,
more confident kind of fighter. Did you notice that even going into it?
Absolutely, like, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. 100%. I think he's in a really good place with Ben Davison. In really good spirits, and the cliche, I hate saying cliches, but you know, happy fire is a dangerous fire, and he's happy, you know, it seems he's really happy. And credit to Ben Davison as well, they're doing a great job.
I love listening to Ben Davison talk, like in interviews and
so
stuff
do I,
like that.
Yeah.
He seems to be his take on boxing is just, even when he was doing it with Tyson Fury, I remember he's kind of unique in the way that he coaches fighters. He's a little bit younger. He's a little bit more like
new age.
Reserved.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of did anything stand out in the way he runs a training session or anything like that stood out to you? Even the way he talks to his fighters.
Yeah, I would know Ben. I have seen Ben on the circuit for a while. I would have met Ben when I fought in Nottingham on Conlon Wood undercard.
Yeah.
Back in my third fight or something like that, and I was a bit starstruck. I was always a big fan of Ben because he's the man who revived Tyson Fury, isn't it? You know what I mean? That's the man who worked with Tyson Fury. So he's always stood out to me, and you know, really switched on, intelligent guy, and I like the way he speaks to his fighters, and I like the systems he uses in fighting. It's actually really appealing, and credit to him because all his fighters are doing really well at the moment.
That does seem to be like he works with someone, they have one of their best performances, works with someone, has one of the best performances. So I mean, when he came in, I remember, because Joshua did go to a few different coaches, and then obviously Tyson had gone to Kronk and done those kind of things. So do you see the value in kind of moving with a couple of different trainers, even for like a camp, just
yeah,
to
absolutely,
get some different looks?
You know, obviously Pascal's my trainer, but I have spent a lot of time around all these top coaches in the world, including Pascal.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you can pick something up from everybody. You know, even, you know, your coach that's been coaching for 6 months down in the local gym, you can pick something up from him, I'm sure, depending.
It's a big thing in MMA. You can go gym to gym. Different people specialize in different stuff.
Yeah.
You can go and pick up, it could be something small, it could be something huge, but they're big in, go and learn as much as you can, and you always have your coach to come back to. So it's lovely to see Joshua having some success, and hopefully, as you said, he comes back and wins a fucking belt.
Yeah, yeah.
Last question. Obviously, we have Fury and Usyk coming up. What do you think is going to happen?
You just can't bet against Fury. Mm. You know what I mean? That my opinion is, I was always a huge fan of Fury. I've sparred with him now a good few times in the lead up to when this fight was supposed to happen all these times. And what can I say? Like, it goes a lot deeper. Like, I analyze it a lot deeper than probably a lot of people. And I just can't see how Usyk can beat Fury, but I can see how Fury can beat Usyk. Now, it could be very wrong.
Yeah.
But I just can't.
I would be blown away to see Usyk outbox Tyson Fury for 12 rounds.
Yeah.
I think it would be, if we do say it would be remarkable, but I think it's going to be so, I think that's why it's so interesting.
Having shared the ring with Fury, like he's an anomaly in himself. Like there's no one like Fury in the world with those skills, the footwork, you know what I mean?
The size.
The size, like it's really, I can't see how, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, you know, even in my head.
We cut back to this.
Yeah, skill, honestly. Yeah. No, I'm trying, in my head, I'm trying to be like, make a case for Usyk to be Fury. And like, I'm literally thinking through like how he could, because I'm left-handed. Like I, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm similar to Usyk, but I would emulate him a tiny bit stylistically, and just too big and too good. Do you know what I mean? And Fury is too stubborn. You know what I mean? He's way too stubborn.
Do you think we're just finishing now? Did you think after the Ngannou, was there any thought that Ngannou or Tyson maybe took the Ngannou fight a little bit less light or more lightly because he was inexperienced, and maybe that led to Ngannou has his best performance, obviously being unknown, hard to train for, and Tyson maybe takes the foot off the gas a little bit, thinking it'll be easier, and those two things kind of collided into the fight we saw? Or is it just styles?
I don't think so. I think, you know, styles make fights. You know, that's another cliche. Styles do make fights. And even the shot that Ngannou caught Fury with, it was in the back of the head, and it probably would have knocked anybody down. And Fury styled. He was pulling out. Ngannou overreached, caught him in the back of the head. He went down. You know, I still think Fury won the fight clearly. Didn't look amazing. We all know he didn't look amazing. Yeah, but there was a couple of extenuating circumstances, if you know him personally, that he's told me about. These things happen. Do you know what I mean? It happens. And all that matters, and I took a great bit of advice from this interview that he did a long time ago, was that all that really matters is he won the fight. And in 20 years, all that will be remembered is he won the fight. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Thomas, thank you so much for coming on, man. Genuinely, thank you so much, lads. I'm so excited to see what goes on in your career, man. Obviously, we'll be watching intently over here. Guys, get over to Thomas's Instagram. Obviously, we don't have a fight announced right now. We're excited to see what comes up, man. And thank you for taking the time.
Fight very soon.
Yeah?
We're 6 weeks out, but I can't say officially, but very, very soon.
Fuck, all right, lads.
Passport's ready, yeah.
Well, we'll push all that out, yeah. And, you'll see the clips coming out and stuff like that. Thanks for taking the time, man. I appreciate you, yeah.